صلى على محمد وآل محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيد الأنبياء والمرسلين حبيب الله العالمين أبي القاسم محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل
وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين سيما بقية الله في الأرضين. قال الله تعالى في كتابه الكريم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ونريد أن نمن على الذين استضعفوا في الأرض ونجعلهم أئمة ونجعلهم الوارثين. صلوا على محمد وآل محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
الحمد لله for all his blessings and for all his bounties which he has bestowed us, and according to the Holy Quran, the best of his guidance and best of his bounties are in the shape of logic and rational which he has given us. It is interesting to compare any normal human with some type of animal. If you do that, you see, sometimes we think that only we are making decisions, and because of this making decisions, we are superior, because no other way we can be called superior. And this is very famous, that humanity is superior, the best of the creations. So why they are superior? Because they make decisions. But if you go to the animals and you see them, are they really without decisions? Don't they make decisions? Sometimes I think their decisions are not that clear, but at least they are not machines. They are not mechanical in their nature. They make decisions. So if you see a machine going on, and if it crushes someone, that can happen with machine, with mechanical apparatus. But it very rarely happens with an animal. So normally you can see animals making decisions. But I think the difference is not that they don't make decisions and we are the only one who make decisions, but the superior decision, I think. This is the difference. They cannot take their future accounted in their decisions, and we can do this. So a good decision, and in which you can see your future, you can compare the risk involved, in which you can compare the result of your the result of the decisions. This is what we have as a superior thing in ourselves. So this is your life. You can see your temporary gains, and you can opt for one selection or the other, and you can see your future, and you can have your good future in your sight, and then make a good decision. If you look at the life of humanity in this sense, then I think, unfortunately, very rarely people are really superior to animals. Very rarely. Because normally they do the same thing. Normally they take inside their temporary gains. At once they see, okay, I can get this, they just jump in. And you see all this world, what's happening here? They cannot see their hereafter. They just see their 30 years or 20 years inside. And for the sake of these 20, 70 years, 30 years, they bring all these miseries to this world. And here we are with all these wars, with all these conflicts, with all these injustices in this world. So what we should do now, we should take in account the bigger reality, the bigger picture of this scene. You have your big life to come, and if you take in account that life, then your decisions will be changed. Now, how can you do this? I think the single most important word which I could find in the whole teachings of Islam is control. How you could control yourself? I think this is the most important thing which Islam tries to teach us. in our prayers, in the fasting, in pilgrimage, Hajj, and in every part of Islamic teachings. They want to teach us how to control ourselves. And fasting, I think, is the best example in the teachings of Islam. How we can control ourselves. Because if you have control, you can do a lot of things. And if you unfortunately don't have it, or anyone don't have it, then unfortunately this is not going to happen in the good way. Somehow people have some sort of control in themselves in a few issues, and this is Europe, and you see how they punish those who have some type of narcotics or you see things like this. But they can earn very well on this, but they don't do this. They know the punishment and they make a good decision. They say that, okay, if I get involved in that business, I will earn very quickly, but the risk is very high. If I got, arrested and I was punished, the punishment will be very high, so they leave it and they don't get themselves involved in it. I wonder why they don't see the same thing happening with them in other aspects of their life. Why we don't see this? We are fearing of 20 years of, for example, arrest or jail in this life, and if we really believe, why don't we fear hundreds of years after the hereafter, after this life, in the hereafter? And we get easily involved in this punishment. So this is one of the comparison, and the other one is our sickness or illness. Because someone is ill or sick, in the physical term, I mean, they avoid a few pleasures, and just to get their cure and just to be healthy again, they avoid a lot of pleasures. But Amir al-Mu'mineen says in Nahjul Balagha, I wonder on someone who is ill and he avoid a lot of pleasures to be healthy again, but he don't avoid because of command of Allah. Though the illness could harm him only on his physical part, which is a temporary part. And the command of Allah, if he disobeys and if he neglects it, it will harm his spiritual life, which is much longer and much harsher the punishment will be. So if you get control in your hand, and if you could ask yourself, what I'm going to do now? Is it right or wrong? Can I control myself? I think this is the key thing. This is the key issue on which all everything revolves. Yesterday we mentioned how we can get Qurbat, that is Asma'ul Husna, and the 99 names. And if you control yourself and make good decisions, you can reflect those 99 names in yourself. And this is the highest reward what one could have think of it. And you see, what people do here, do all these illegal things here. They want wealth, they want power, they want fame. So if they are really logical person, why they don't get, they want to get limited wealth, try to get unlimited wealth. They want fame. Why you want to get fame only for this temporary life? Try to get fame for the whole existence. The angels could recognize you, the angels could move with you. You want power. So why do you want power of a country or of only a few people? If you want to get power, then listen to that great tradition of the Holy Prophet, in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says to the Prophet, Abdi Atayni Aj'aluka Mithli. O my servant, obey me. I will make you just like myself. I say, Kun. I say kun, fayakun. Then it happens. And I will give you such a power, you will say, be it, and it will happen. And I live forever, and I will make you such that you will live forever. So instead of going behind limited power, limited fame, limited wealth, why don't you want to go towards unlimited one? And the path is with control. With command, with obeying the command of Allah, we can get all these blessings from Allah. Sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. And in comparison of those two armies at the Battle of Karbala, army of Yazid and army of Imam Hussein, again we can easily see the same difference. Here you have a commander, which is Umar ibn Sa'd, and he has an objective, which is the government, which is a government of a city of Ray, which is very close to Tehran right now. And he has the invitation from Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, or an offer from Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad rather, that he will make him the governor of that city. And he went behind it, and he came in front of Imam Hussein, and there is a beautiful conversation between both of them. Imam Hussein called him in the night of Ashura, and called him in a camp, and he said, "I want to talk to you. Don't bring too many people with you, because they were spies of Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, and especially Shimr ibn Zaljawshan was reporting to Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad directly about Umar ibn Sa'd. Because Umar ibn Sa'd was a character not that much confirmed to kill Imam Hussein, but unfortunately he could not control himself. So he was a bit reluctant, and Ubaydullah ibn Sa'd noticed this reluctance in Umar ibn Sa'd. So he sent Shim, the tough guy, and according to one of the dreams of Imam, he was a wolf in his nature, a horrible thing. And Shim was reporting to Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad that Umar ibn Sa'd is a bit reluctant. So Imam Hussein invited Umar ibn Sa'd and said, "Come alone and don't bring anyone with you." He said, "I will bring just one person." He, of course, not Shim. He said, "Okay." And then from Imam Hussein went into the camp. There was a camp between the two armies, and Imam Hussein went with only Hazrat Ali Akbar. And both of them were unarmed. So they just got a chance to sit together. And at that moment, I do think that Imam was certainly not going to change he was not trying to change the whole result of the battle. That was not going to change. Because even if Umar ibn Sa'd was convinced not to fight Imam Hussein, Shimr was not convinced. Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad was not convinced. So army was there. Just Imam was trying to rescue Umar ibn Sa'd. Can I save him, this single person? Because the battle was going to happen. It was not in the command of Umar ibn Sa'd only. There were many commanders. So just Imam was trying to rescue him. Can I save that person from going to hell? So Imam said, "Why you came here? Have I done anything wrong with you?" He said, "No." Imam said, "Why you did that? Don't you know that I am the grandson of your prophet?" He said, "I know you." He said, "Don't you know my status?" He said, "Yes, I know it." He said, "Why you did that?" He said, "I have my gardens, I have my properties in Kufa, and if I have not came here, he would have destroyed them." Imam said, are you befooling yourself? Come to Medina, I will give you many gardens. Come to Medina, I will give you many properties. What are you behind?" He said, "No, this is not the only reason. I have my home at Kufa, and if I don't come here and fight you, he will destroy my home." Imam said, "Again, I can give you many homes. I have a lot of property in Medina, I can give you many homes. You may come here. Again, I tell you, this is not going to change the battle. Battle was there. Just Imam was trying to rescue this person." Then finally he said, "No, there are many issues. If my children and my family, my wife is held in Kufa, and if I had not fought you, they would have been killed." So Imam kept his silence and he did not say anything, but there was a silent reply to this answer that to save your children, you are killing the children of Prophet. To save your wife and children, you are killing the family of the Prophet. Is it justice? So he never said anything, and he just kept his quiet, and they went away from each other. But you see how this guy is playing with himself. He was not saving his children. He was not saving his wife. He repeatedly announced that I'm doing this just for the Ray, government of Ray. So even then, there is another issue in this person. He makes excuses for himself. This was not the right answer which he offered against Imam Hussein's question. There is another big mistake in a person, making excuse. Don't make excuse. If I did something wrong, I should plainly say, okay, I did wrong. I made a mistake. I should go to Allah and ask forgiveness, not to make excuse. Because if I try to make excuse, then I can destroy everything with an excuse. Now look at this Western world. How are they doing? Everything, for everything they have an excuse. For killing people at Iran, for killing people at Afghanistan, for killing everyone, they have an excuse. There was a wonderful poster there. I Muslim, do this to me and say this. Do this to me and say this. And they are doing everything with this excuse. So, this is just in the corner, that don't make excuses for yourself. Be on the straight line. If you are doing something good, this is good. If I'm doing something wrong, okay, I should accept that this is wrong. If I try to make excuse, it will pave the way for everything. So Umar ibn Sa'd was playing with himself. He was not just saving his wife and children. Repeatedly he announced that, I want that garment of red. And on the day of Ashura, the night he answered that question, on the day of Ashura, at some times he was showing his anger towards Imam Hussain. And Imam Hussain said, now Umar ibn Sa'd, be sure you will not get red. You will not eat the grain of red. He said, okay, I will avoid grain, I will eat something else. This was his answer. So if he was really behind saving his wife and children, could he answer that sentence to Imam Hussain? So it was just an excuse. So he was looking at a garment, and those who were beside Imam Hussain, they were not looking at any garment. They were looking at their heavens, and they were looking at their good result. In one of the traditions I saw, on the day of Ashura, one of the companions said a sentence which was of a fun to another one. The other guy said, this is not a good time for fun, for jokes. You see how in trouble we are. That first person said, I know, I realize this is not the good time, but cannot I see my heaven so close in my eyes? And this makes me feeling the pleasure of heaven. And I like to make fun, though this is not the right time for fun. And this is not the right time for joke, but I'm very happy because I'm very close to what I was looking for. This is the difference. That guy, Umar ibn Sa'd, was looking at a temporary thing, which is garment of ray. And of course, when Imam said, you will not get that garment, he could not get that. When he went back to Kufa and said, went to Ubaidullah ibn Sa'd and said, okay, I kill Imam Hussain, give me the garment. He said, no. Who said you kill him? I never said that. And why Ubaidullah said that? Because public opinion was turning against himself. He was facing a revolution in Kufa. So just to avoid that revolution, he said, I was not behind killing. I was just asking you to bring him here. Umar ibn Sa'd said, how are you making me a foolish person? You told me to kill him, and I killed him. He said, no, I never said to you. So he went out of the court and saying, خَسَرَ الدُّنْيَا وَالْآخِرَةِ ذَلِكَ هُوَ الْخُسْرَانُ الْمُبِينُ. Accepting that, okay, I lost that world, this world, and I lost that world also. This world, because Ubaidullah ibn Sa'd got angry, and once he got angry, he punishes. And I lost that world because I killed Imam Hussain, and there is nothing left for me in the hereafter. ذَلِكَ هُوَ الْخُسْرَانُ الْمُبِينُ. This is the biggest loss. And then we have in tradition that women of Kufa threw the dust on him and said, they laughed and they cursed him and said, why you kill him, Imam Hussain? So this is the difference between having a good decision. Have a good decision, see your permanent life, and see your bigger objectives, and have control over yourself. So, as I told you, the biggest, most important word I could see in all the teachings of Islam is having control. And I think some of the commands from Allah, though we cannot get the rationale behind them, but it shows us how it wants to learn control. So, one might say that, why we do recite 2 rak'ah of Fajr prayer in the morning, why we don't recite 3 or 4 rak'ah, or just we avoid prayer? Sometimes I think this is command of Allah just to test us, Do we have control ourselves on ourselves? Can we offer this control? So you have a particular time, you have a limited time to offer your prayer, and it needs to have your control in your hand. So don't be flown away by your night dreams and by any of your wishes, and just control yourself. Do what they want you to do. And then, if we go to Tazkiyah Nafs, the discussion yesterday, we said that, okay, the Holy Quran said, قَدْ أَفْلَحَ مَنْ زَكَّاهَا. The Holy Quran says, after 11 sentences, only those who purify their soul will get success and prosperity. And this word of control comes here in Tazkiyah. If you want to have Tazkiyah, if you want to purify your soul, you have to have control. And with this control, you purify yourself, and if you purify yourself, you make good decisions. And the army, again, the comparison of two armies, it shows us very easily how the control can play an important role in your life. And that side, the side of Yazid, you had very short-sighted people looking for their temporary gains. They have no control. They have fears, fear of everything, fear of Umar ibn Sa'd, fear of Shamr, fear of Ubayd Allah ibn Ziyad, fear of Yazid, fear of people, fear of losing their life, fear of worldly gains, fear of everything. And on that side, you have a few people very strong in their belief. They have no fear. They were just looking for a certain objective to achieve. We should obey Imam Hussain, because he is the representative of Allah on this earth, and we have to obey him. This was the only objective for them. And I think I used word obey. It was more than just to obey him. It was more than just to obey him. Because at the night of Ashura, Imam Hussain said, I lifted my authority on you. You can go anywhere. I don't ask you to stay there. So if you are just here because you have a command from Allah to obey me, I have lifted my authority, you may go away. And no one went anywhere, so he said that I will guarantee you that I will take you to the heavens, even if you departed me here. No one left the scene. So it was not just obeying someone, I think it is just loving someone by the essence and by the depth of their heart. Because if it was just the case of ruler and the ruled person, then the ruler is allowing them to go away. And fortunately, the ruler was giving them an excuse too. He said, if you are ashamed that you will go away and people will ask you why you left the grandson of the Holy Prophet alone, then there are many children. You take one of my children and go away and show people that we have brought this children and we saved the life of that children. So this is an excuse for you. You may go away. No problem. But it was only the love of Ahlul Bayt, which was in their kind hearts and which was in their purified hearts, that Zuhayr bin Qayn extended, and then Naf bin Halal Bajali they extended. They delivered their speeches there, where Habib ibn Madahir, Salamullah alayhi majma'in, he delivered his speech, and they said, how can we go anywhere? Especially Habib ibn Madahir, he was a very close companion to Imam Hussain. And he said, can I go anywhere because I have a friendship with you from my childhood. And Zuhayr bin Qayn said, how can I go anywhere? And when on the day of judgment, I will see your mother and I will ask your mother to give me shafa'a. How will I ask her to give me? So there were beautiful sentences from them. And again, an expression of faith and loyalty from other companions. So my question was here, and I repeatedly point out this point, that they were normal people. How could they change themselves? They could overcome their weaknesses, they could overcome their desires, they could control themselves. And what a beautiful example in them for all the humanity. So how could they control their fear of death? I think one of the worst fears in a person's life. Though we fear a lot, we fear of losing our career, we fear of losing what we have, or we fear of losing what we could get. So we have two type of fears. Fears of our possessions, that we what we have, we will lose. And fear what we expect to earn, that we what we are expecting to earn, we will lose. They never had any fear. They had nothing to lose, and they were not looking to get anything in this world. So beside these two fears, fear of possession and fear of future, the worst kind of fear is fear of death. They could control everything. They had nothing to protect, and they were expecting nothing in this world. It is possible. Now, why they were not fearing for their death? Now, I think this is good to get an analysis of this fear of death, because everyone who could control this fear will get something. I think if you don't fear of dying, then you are brave enough to take good steps. Though it never means that we go for irrational steps, what we see here and there in this world. But how they control it, and what are the roots of this fear? One of the very, very simple examples in this regard, that if you are changing or if you are moving towards from one home towards other one, and the home you are leaving is beautiful, is luxurious, it is very good for you, and you are going towards a home, a place which is not good, which is not at least that good. So you fear that if I go there, what will happen? But just change the case. If I had a place which was not good, which was giving me pain, and which I'm not satisfied of, and I have been offered to go somewhere which is very good, which is lasting. I was on rent there, and it will be my own, and that will be very spacious, that will be very luxurious, and I'll be respected. Then will I have fear to go there? No fear. And all the troubles of this traveling will be easy for me if I just think of that place. All of us here have traveled to come here. And when you were traveling here, it was not easy to pass all these times. At least it was not easy for me to be in the journey for 16 hours. It looks that it will never end. But okay, you are getting a feeling that okay, I will be there, which I wanted to be, and then it will be okay. These 16 hours, 17 hours will be okay. I will face it. This is the main cause of getting rid of that fear of death. If you have a faith that if I cross this line of death, I will be in a place which is much beautiful, much luxurious, and much respected I will be, then you have no fear. Then it is just like a pain, a temporary pain, and that's all. Now look at the sentences of Imam Hussain. Beautiful sentence. On the day of Ashura, he said, "Mal maut illa al-qantara." That is nothing but a bridge. Just you cross the bridge and you have ended. Mal maut illa al-qantara. It is just a bridge. Just cross the bridge and you have a beautiful place to go. And a beautiful thing happened after Zuhr. Just before Zuhr, when both of the armies were fighting each other, as I mentioned earlier, after Zuhr, Imam Hussain changed the plan of fighting, and he used to send single person against the whole army. Before Zuhr, it was army on army, so Imam Hussain's army was attacked, and they replied, and in reply, more than 20 of them were killed there, and again they were arranging themselves, Maimana, Maisara, and Qalb, right side, left side, and the center. And again, they were going to attack. Then Imam suddenly realized that if they attack too much, I will lose my army even before Zuhr. And there was, I think, a very sensitive strategy by Imam Hussain. He wanted to prolong the war. He wanted to make it happen for a longer period of time. Why? I think because he wanted to show the characters which he had. he never wanted to lose Ali Akbar in a rush of battle. And the army of Yazid could say that we never killed Ali Akbar. It was just an accident. We attacked and he got killed. Imam wanted to show the bravery of his companion. Imam wanted to show the characteristics of his companion. So he said, no army or army after Zohr. You will go alone, my side. Companions of my side will go alone on the whole army. So now there is no way they could hide Ali Akbar. No way they could deny we never killed Hazrat Qasim. And no way they could deny Hazrat Abbas. Everyone was working because there was a single person coming. And he was saying all those sentences of writs, showing his bravery. And this was, one of the points when why Imam changed the strategy of the battle. So before Zohar, the army was trying to arrange themselves again, though there were many of them were killed. Imam said a beautiful sentence. He said, Ya Ahl al-Karam, Isbiru al-Maut. You are the very generous people. Just be patient and don't be hurry for your death. Why in such a hurry you are moving for your death? Okay, you love to die, but have patience. Don't die too early. I want you to be with me for more time. This is really strange when someone says that be patient on your death. And okay, you are going to die, but be patient, Allah will reward you. But the other side, I was saying, don't go in a hurry. Just wait, live for a longer time while you are going there. So this was beautiful. Everyone was saying, oh, okay, I will go earlier. Because they never had any fear of death. Why they should fear? They were going to a very beautiful place. They were thirsty. They were under siege. They had every sort of trouble which you could imagine. And they know it is just going there, being killed by the enemy, and moving into the heavens. Moving into the blessings of Allah. Moving towards the peace and heaven, which Allah showed them that it is waiting for them. And Imam Hussain did that on the night of Karbala, night of Ashura, that they showed everyone where you will go after being killed here. So they were very well satisfied. So I think if you want to get control of this fear of death, and there's a killing fear. Someone told me that he saw a person who was announced to get death, and he said that person had black hair everywhere on his beard and on his head, and then in a single night, his hairs got white. He said, I saw this strange thing. On a single night this happened. So this is the fear of death. It kills someone without being killed. And if you want to control it, just look at your future and send good things for the next life. If you send something which you don't like to meet, then you will have fear of death. Send good things. The Holy Quran says regarding the Jews, they are fearing of their death. Why? بِمَا قَدَّمَتْ أَيْدِيهِمْ They have not sent good things for themselves in the hereafter. So you send good things. The ruler is also waiting for you. And ruler do accept a very few of your good deeds. And he is a forgiving existence. So you can have control on your fear and you can move in your life with a lot of pleasure. That's with this control in your mind. So the summary of whatever we said humanity is superior, surely superior. The Holy Quran titles this the mankind, and he said Tabarakallah Ahsan al-Khaliqin. After revealing all the process of creation of humanity, at the end Allah said Tabarakallah Ahsan al-Khaliqin. He is the best of the creators, and as he is the proud of this his creation of humanity. But why we are superior? Because we can make decisions? No. Because we can make good decisions. We can take an account of our future, and this is the superior thing in ourselves. So, for taking good decisions, we need control. If we have control, we have purification. We have purification, we will get success. قَدْ أَفْلَحَ مَنْ زَكَّاهَا. And when you have purification, you are rid of a lot of troubles. One of the troubles is fear. Fear of losing something. Fear of not getting something. And the worst of the fear is fear of death. And I said, if you have good things to face you after your death, then it is beautiful to go there. Wal maut illa qantara. The death is nothing but a bridge to go from there to that world. And we have lots of other fears, fear of losing something and fear of what's going to happen, what will happen to me, what will happen to my family. Lot of fears in a person's mind. Every fear has roots in deception. Every fear has root in misunderstanding. So if we understand, try to understand the universe, the game here, the power of Allah, and just have tawakkul, rely on Allah, then you see all these fears are nothing but toys in front of us. Inshallah, we will discuss this part tomorrow. صلى على محمد وآل محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Anyone having any suggestion or is your question something? Yes, please.
Yes. I've heard that the shahada is if we die here in another country, then that means we'll get the shahada, and we inshallah go to the paradise.
Okay.
Is it true?
Oh yeah, we have a traditions that the death in ghurbat, that is being away from a country, from your country, is shahada. But you see, this title of shahada should have many meanings. Just as in case of material things, you say, I am hungry. If this sentence of being hungry has different meanings and different labels, and if you say that, no, I'm not feeling hungry, not feeling is also having different stages and different levels. I feel pleasure, and this feeling pleasure is different. You feel pleasure by dinner, you feel pleasure by traveling to a beautiful place, and you feel pleasure by looking at your loved ones, and you feel pleasure in many things. So all these things have many grades. Shahada and the reputation of Shahada has different levels. So death in a country away is shahada, but one sort of shahada. Death in the path of achieving knowledge is shahada, but another type of shahada. And death when you are fighting with enemies of Allah in a battlefield, on the front line, you die instantly. This is the shahada, what we are talking about. And this is the criteria with which we match all these shahada. So this is the superior shahada. Death in front of enemies on the front line instantly, without going to hospital or without going anywhere. This is the shahada which you need any coffin. Don't need any coffin, which you don't need any wosul. So you buried as he was or she was. So this also shahada, but not that type of shahada, a lower stage of shahada. And then there is another question. Which shahada gives us the pleasure of all our sins being removed, all our sins being, you see, nullified and wiped off? I think that type of shahada only. But in this type of shahada, you get a reflection of this reward, but not that type of reward. In that type of shahada, you have so many blessings. You have so many rewards, and we have that a beautiful tradition which says, what happens when the first drop of blood drops on the earth of that shaheed? What happens? What happens when he dies? What happens when his body was lifted from that earth? And but okay, in case of those going for knowledge gain and killed is called shahada, and death in a country away from your home country is called shahada. I think there must be some reflection, otherwise it was not called shahada. There must be some reflection, but not that type of reflection. Yes, please.
What kind of relationship could you have with a homosexual? Because you meet them at your workplace, your school. How can you, like, if you're a teacher who's homosexual, you can't just say, if he's trying to be too nice to you, you have to be nice back, or what kind
of... I think this culture which prevails here is quite difficult to see why this person is involved in this illness. I call it illness, some type of illness. Though surely those who are living here, well, if they got this word illness, they will react to it harshly. They said it is not illness, this is very natural, and we have the hormones of this kind of this attraction and this and that. But okay, in my opinion, or in the opinion of Islam, it is a sort of illness. So we can deal with this person in two ways. First, if he knows he is going wrong. And the second, if he feels that, okay, he's an innocent person, he don't know what he's doing actually. And he's somehow caught into this trouble, or caught into this culture of homosexuality in the Western world. So I think there should be difference between those who do realize that we are not doing something good, and those who don't know actually, and they were somehow, I may say, caught in this wave of homosexuality going on in the Western world. What should be our reaction based on these two differences, based on these two types? I would like to, if I could, I would like to give him some sort of, I cannot say guidance, he will not accept anything from guidance, but okay, I would like to somehow enlighten him. Okay, is this the only way to live? Is this the only way to live for yourself? And if you feel no, he's perfectly satisfied with his life and he's doing what he's doing, and no way he could change, and no way you could bring any change in his life, then better I will keep myself away. I will keep myself away. I will not make any good interaction with him. I will have friendly interaction with him. It is just as normal as everyone else. And then I will try to avoid actually. And I think normally what you normally do in your life, this is what you normally do actually. How do you do this? Yeah?
I just say hi, how are you? And if they talk to me, I just answer them. But I don't know. You just basically meet them at work and you just have to talk to them. And I basically want to work outside. I have to stand with someone and okay. About 4 hours. Mm-hmm. I have to speak with that person about what's happening and many under my work and stuff like that. So I'm just being nice, I don't know.
Okay, just being nice in a sense that, okay, it's normal. That's not normally how you deal with people. You deal with him or her. But okay, if you could get any chance of telling him or her that there might be another way of life, I don't think you'll get any chance.
Yeah, I don't think so, because I'm working for Amnesty International.
Okay.
And they have like campaigns for homosexuals. So if that person is working for a campaign for homosexuals, I just can't. Like, I don't think that if I'm gonna say don't work with this campaign, it should just turn away or something.
Yeah, that's better. Yes. Okay. So you are in a very tough position. I do realize. Yes. You are saying something.
Yes. It's the same question. I know a girl. She is a practicing psychologist, and she had a person who was a Muslim and a boy from Muslim parents, and there is not. He's not alone. There is. A